efforts to get out the vote in Maine, and how turnout might affect the election. Maine voters will be making a lot of decisions at the polls this November. In addition to the presidential race, voters will vote on 6 ballot questions, including 5 citizen referenda, every seat in the state legislature, and local ballot questions. Maine historically has one of the highest voter turnout rates in the nation. In 2014, Maine led the country with a 58.5% turnout. And in the last presidential election, Maine was 6th at 69.2%. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, getting voters to the polls. What could we expect this year, and how might it affect the results of all those races and ballot initiatives, both locally and nationally? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news update. From the MPBN studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. On November 8th, voters from around the country will head to the polls to vote on the presidential election, as well as so-called down-ballot races. Mainers have a long history of being very civically engaged. Will that record hold this year? Today, we're going to talk about what's being done to get out the vote in Maine. We will also discuss voter turnout trends in Maine and nationally. In the studio with me, Jill Ward, who is president of the Maine League of Women Voters. On the line with us from his office at the University of Maine at Farmington is James Melcher. And joining us from our Augusta studio, Matt Dunlap, Maine's Secretary of State. As always, we want to hear from you. Do you plan on voting this November? If so, why? If not, why not? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Welcome to all of you.
Good afternoon.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for bringing us together on this.
And I should say that Jim is a political science professor at the University of Maine, Farmington. Matt Dunlap, we're going to start with, what do you expect for vote turnout this November in Maine? Do you predict that we will hit 70 or even 75%?
Well, this is a question we get every election cycle, and I always like to have the little disclaimer that the tea leaves I use are store brand. So a lot of things can happen between now and election day. So, you know, I think typically the presidential cycle is always our busiest cycle. We're one of the top 3 states in the country, along with Oregon and Minnesota, for voter turnout because we have very similar laws that embrace voter participation. So we could be as high as 70% or higher. Certainly in the high 60s is not out of the realm of the possible, but it's going to really depend on what those factors between now and Election Day, like how the campaigns do in getting out the vote and getting their issues before voters and captivating voter interest. So that remains to be seen here over the next 49 days or so.
Jill Ward, I understand this is one of the biggest priorities, if not the biggest priority, for the League of Women Voters. Why, in your view, is a high voter turnout so important?
Well, we believe strongly and always have that our democracy works better when more people participate. So the more voices get heard, the more voters turn out, the more representative our government ends up being of what the people want. So we are really excited to be involved in a bunch of activities around voter registration, getting folks registered to vote in Maine. As the Secretary said, we have very friendly access laws for voters. It's easy to register. It's easy to register on Election Day and vote. So there's good access, but we do think there's education that can be done among new voters, younger voters. So we are working with lots of partners in the state and part of a national effort around September 27th, National Voter Registration Day, to really lift up voter registration and get folks excited about voting in the fall.
What will you be doing on September 27th? Will you be knocking on doors and driving people in vans to voter registration sites?
If only we had the capacity to do that. No, we're a small but mighty team of volunteers that work with the league to set up events in high schools. We're going to be on college campuses. We're going to be in some other public venues across the state. You can go to our website and see where we're holding events on the 27th specifically, but we're also sponsoring voter registration activities this week, the week after, just in and around that September 27th date.
Okay, Jim Melcher, turning to you for the political slant here. The conventional wisdom is that high voter turnout favors Democrats and low voter turnout favors Republicans. Is this conventional wisdom really true?
It depends on what kind of election that you have. Historically, that was true for a long, long time, and that was associated with correlation of socioeconomic status, richer, better educated people. Generally do tend to vote at higher rates, and people that are less educated, lower income, consistently do vote at lower rates. But the party divisions on those aren't as clear as they were, say, in the 1930s and 1940s. Certainly in the last election, many observers thought high voter turnout in the second district to vote on the bear baiting question was beneficial to Republicans. So, overall, I would say there's more reason to say that high turnout tends to favor Democrats, but that's certainly not true all of the time, and it depends on how good their get-out-the-vote operations are. You asked Jill about what would be done about getting people to vote, and that's usually a party function much more than other kinds of groups, and I think one question that I'd like to see dealt with is, given that you've got two nominees that are not particularly popular in Maine or nationwide, are the parties going to be able to attract people to work in those get out the vote things? Because that's really a function of parties, and I think it remains to be seen whether people feel excited enough about the party nominees to get out and do that kind of work. So I think we might have a lower turnout than usual.
Jim, you mentioned the bear baiting referendum 2 years ago. I'm wondering how this year's ballot initiatives might affect voter turnout. I've heard some who believe that the marijuana initiative will turn out a younger, more progressive voter, but others believe that the background check initiative will motivate the conservative rural vote. What do you think the mix of ballot questions we have this time will do for voter turnout? And will it sway, one direction or the other?
Well, I don't always get to say that everybody's right, and I'm giving a quiz today, and I doubt everybody will be right. On those questions, that's true, but one thing you have to remember, as Matt mentioned, is that presidential years bring out a lot more people anyway. There aren't as many on-the-fence voters to bring out. So having a controversial initiative like bear baiting was 2 years ago has more ability to bring people out that wouldn't turn out in an election than any of these issues do in a presidential year, because Maine's turnout is already very high. I do think that the marijuana initiative is likely to bring out younger voters, and the background checks may bring out some more liberal people in urban areas and more conservative people, but there just isn't as much room to bring voter turnout up in a presidential year, though maybe that will help insulate the drop in voting that may come from having candidates who did not carry Maine in their nomination contest.
Matt, we hear a lot about early voting, and Jill mentioned that. What kind of early voting is available in Maine, and when does it start? Give us a primer.
Well, first of all, we don't have early voting. We have absentee balloting. And I like to make that distinction because some jurisdictions across this country have true early voting. And I'll explain, the difference here. But I just want to piggyback on what Jim said about, how turnout affects the results of an election and how ballot questions can have that same impact. I think, in 2014 with the bear hunting referendum that we saw, it sort of encouraged a spike in turnout, especially in rural areas in the second CD, which offset the advantage of a typically higher turnout in the first congressional district. Like he said, though, in a presidential cycle, any advantage in turnout in either district is offset by the presidential election. But getting to early voting and absentee balloting, the difference between early voting and absentee balloting is that when you vote early, you go to a polling station. It could be set up in a town office, and you actually you mark your ballot and you cast it into a ballot box or a voting machine, a tabulating machine. Absentee balloting, you have to fill out a request. You either do that on paper, online, or by phone with your town clerk. They provide you with an absentee ballot through some mechanism. Either they mail it to you or somebody brings it to you. And then you mark it and you send it back. And then there's a process for processing that ballot on election day or before election day in the larger communities. So if there's a challenge to your ballot and you may not know it, then that ballot is not cast. unless that challenge is resolved, either on election day or at a later date if there's a challenge to the overall election. So there's a lot of paperwork with absentee balloting, but absentee balloting, which people like to call early voting, begins for Mainers, people who are in state. They can request an absentee ballot 90 days in advance of the election. The absentee ballots will be available 30 days before the election. And if you account for Halloween and the November 8th election, that translates into October 9th. So military and overseas voters will have their ballots available for them 45 days prior to the election, which is later this week. And as I mentioned, people can request them at any time. So one of the things about absentee balloting that's interesting to me as somebody who's been in the business now for two decades is that since the legislature adopted the change in law to allow access to an absentee ballot without a reason, you didn't have to swear out an affidavit as to why you couldn't be at the polls on election day, we've seen the use of the absentee ballot by voters increase exponentially. It used to be about 3-5% of all ballots cast. Now it's knocking on over 35% of the total turnout in any election, and that's changing the way these campaigns and candidates run their campaigns. They can't wait for the last minute to put out their big push. They have to get their information to voters earlier.
And is that something the League of Women Voters is emphasizing, Jill, the ability to use that absentee ballot?
Yeah, we do. We want to make sure that people understand that they can vote early, but that they can prepare by getting an absentee ballot if they think they're going to be out of town. It's really easy to do. We also want to make clear that up until and through the whole day on Election Day, you can show up to vote and register on Election Day as well. So if you are 18 and you are a citizen of the United States and you want to vote in the town that you live in, there's really nothing getting in your way from doing that.
Somebody can request an absentee ballot, decide not to vote absentee, and still go to their polling place?
Correct.
Okay,
yes,
that's
they can.
Good information. Jim Melcher, lots of people prognosticating about the effect of early voting or here in Maine, absentee ballot voting swaying the election. I'm asking really both about Maine and about the national election. How much of a change in the outcome, in your view, does the 35% of voters voting early have?
I think it's less a matter of changing the outcome as becoming a tool for political parties, that again, this ties into their efforts at what we call get out the vote, where they're trying to find who their supporters are, get them to the polls. And it works heavily to the benefit of party organizations, because when they know people have voted early, those are people they don't have to contact again. They don't have to contact about shaping rides, the rest of it. I certainly think it's something that a lot of voters that would be less likely to vote may want to use, that younger voters may be comfortable with that if they're away from their hometown and want to be voting that way. It makes it easier for the elderly. But rather than helping one party or another, I really think that it strengthens the importance of party organizations and makes their get-out-the-vote efforts a lot more efficient. And parties have been pushing this really hard in Maine over the last 10 years. They'll call people and urge them to vote early. It's something parties want to do for their own purposes.
There's also been a lot, Jim, written about the efforts, and we heard this early during the primaries with Bernie Sanders and with some of the Republican candidates, as several of the Republican candidates as well. But now we're hearing Donald Trump still say that he's going to get people who don't usually vote out to vote. How realistic is that? How realistic is to think that these candidates, any candidates, are going to get people who traditionally don't vote to the polls this year?
I think there's a distinct possibility that Donald Trump could do. Now, first of all, as I said, the candidates both overall have a relatively low level of popularity, but some people might be motivated to vote against either of the major party candidates because of that reason. Having a strong third party campaign in Gary Johnson might bring people out. But I think Donald Trump has a very different kind of appeal to voters than a traditional Republican like a Mitt Romney did. And Trump campaigning in Maine is indicative that he thinks that Maine's older demographic, a little less educated demographic, are the kind of people he's reaching out to. I think Donald Trump probably will bring some voters to the polls that wouldn't turn out otherwise. And there may be people that want to see the first woman president that may vote for Hillary Clinton, but she's more of a traditional Democrat than Trump is a traditional Republican. But it's hard to say whether having Trump on is a net benefit to voter turnout or a net negative. I think that he's going to turn off some traditional Republicans and bring out some independents to vote that might not have, but it might be a wash in the end.
Something for political scientists to study, right?
Absolutely.
Go ahead, Matt.
It's all going to be very clear the day after the election. Right now, we're groping in the dark. But on November 9th, think, oh, that's what happened.
I don't have glasses, but my vision isn't nearly that good.
So, Matt, I understand there's something new. Folks with certain disabilities will have access to something called an AVS device. Explain to us what is new at the polls this year.
Well, it's actually new technology, but we've been doing this for a few years. Since we adopted the provisions of the Help America Vote Act that allowed for accessible voting, so someone with disabilities, in as much as possible, could vote without assistance. We've been doing this probably since about 2006. And the system that we were using, people may remember seeing it in the polls, a little station off to the side of the voting booths with a telephone and a fax machine. And people with disabilities would use the telephone to mark their choices on the ballot, and the ballot would be faxed to them from our central servers. And now that technology has been replaced with some new technology, something that we've picked up from Elections Systems and Software. They're the ones that's the same company that does our tabulating machines. It's called the Express Vote, and it's a single unit. It has a video display screen. It has a built-in printer. And it has a controller attached to it, so it's designed to accommodate any voter by offering an audio and a visual ballot, allowing them to make ballot selections by touching the screen. It has a controller that has Braille available to it and unique colored buttons. So people with different disabilities or different abilities, and you don't have to be disabled, by the way, to use this. Anybody can use this technology to mark their ballot, and it prints out a ballot for them, and they submit that ballot to the election official to cast. So it's basically some assistive technology for people with disabilities. We launched this last June primary. We used it for the first time. We made the selection back in February. And people have been very excited about it. So it's just a new tool for voters to make sure they get their voice heard.
Well, that's Matt Dunlop, our Secretary of State. He's here with Jill Ward, the President of the Board of the Maine League of Women Voters, and Jim Melcher, a Professor of Political Science at UMaine Farmington. We're talking about voter turnout and get out the vote efforts. We'll be right back. This is Maine Calling.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Lambert Coffin, legal advisors for Maine families in estate planning, probate administration, and will contests, online at lambertcoffin.com. MEMIC, a workers' compensation insurance company dedicated to safer workplaces, fair treatment for all workers, and a strong Maine economy, on the web at MEMIC.com. And the Goldfarb Center for Public Affairs and Civic Engagement at Colby College, confronting complex issues through innovative programming, service, and scholarship.
On the next Fresh Air, how Ryan Speedo Green went from being an angry, violent child doing time in a juvenile detention center to singing at the Metropolitan Opera. In 2011, he won the Met's National Council auditions. He's about to sing the role of Colleen in the Met's production of La Boheme. And there's a new biography of him, although he's only 30. Join us.
And join us for Fresh Air this evening at 7 o'clock. MPBN will once again be at the Common Ground Country Fair in Unity this coming weekend, Friday, September 23rd through this Sunday, the 25th. The Common Ground Country Fair is the annual event of the Maine Organic Farmers and Gardeners Association. People from across Maine and New England gather together to celebrate the rural and agricultural traditions and lifestyles of Maine with lots going on. Livestock, crafts, food, demonstrations, kids' activities, and if you visit our booth, a chance for you to say hello to many of the voices and faces you hear and see on Maine Public Radio and Maine Public Television. Visit mpbn.net and click on events for all the details. We hope to see you there.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, efforts to get out the vote in 2016. In the studio with me, Jill Ward, who is president of the Maine League of Women Voters. On the line from UMaine Farmington, political science professor James Melcher. And joining us from our Augusta studio, Matthew Dunlap, Maine's Secretary of State. Join the conversation, 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mpbn.net. Tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. Joining us now is Maine AARP President Rich Livingston. Rich, thanks for giving us a call.
Thanks, Jennifer. I'm delighted to hear people. I'm delighted to hear this topic come to the forefront right now.
Well, tell us about the Mainers who are older than 50 who turn out to vote. Yeah, how high is that vote? What percentages are we talking about?
It's probably the most reliable voting bloc there is in the state, and it has maxed out at as high as 85%, and often leads the country. While Maine is in the top 5 or 6 in the nation in terms of voter turnout, the senior voter turnout among seniors is often the highest in the country. And in terms of preserving voter turnout, what can be done to ensure that's consistent this year? We know what issues are important to seniors. They tell us all the time. Yet very few candidates for any statewide or national office are actually talking about the issues that are most important to seniors. If they did so, that would go a long way to preserving this enormous advantage that we have in terms of voter turnout.
And what are those issues? I'm going to guess Social Security. Is that on the top of the list?
Social Security and Medicare, Social Security First, are at the top of the list in terms of federal issues. At the state level, there are all sorts of considerations, including housing and health care and opportunities to age in place and age-friendly communities. These are the issues that seniors talk about amongst themselves all the time and have been trying to encourage candidates to get engaged with, but there's been very little dialogue about it at any level. So
given that these issues, many senior citizens share these interests in these same issues, and I say senior citizen loosely because we're talking about people over 50 and a bunch of people in the studio and in the
definition.
So I want to say that given that these issues are issues that many people share in common, does that mean that people of a certain age tend to vote as a block?
No, they don't necessarily vote the same way. There was some conversation. I heard your panelists talking about this earlier. I don't think senior vote is predictable in terms of candidate preference, but they do vote issues, and they are responsive to issue discussions and issue advocacy. There are a number of issues that are on the ballot that are not age-related, and so the impact of the senior vote is even less predictable in those cases. And you mentioned a couple of them, the marijuana legalization, background checks, and so on, are not age-related. So there's absolutely no way to predict how seniors are going to vote on some of those things. But in terms of motivating seniors and getting them to the polls, the issues of health care, housing, Social Security, financial security are the driving factors.
Well, Rich Livingston, thanks so much for calling in. Rich Livingston is AARP president in Maine. Jim Melcher, given that Maine has an older population, the oldest in the country on average, how does that affect how people campaign here, what issues drive the vote here in Maine, or does it?
Well, I think the biggest thing, much as the man from AARP said, is that's a lot of why our voter turnout is so high. Around the country, older voters tend to be the leading demographic in coming out about these sorts of things and have more of those commitments. Older voters also are more likely to have a commitment to a particular political party. Their voting can be more predictable, but senior citizens don't tend to vote as a block most of the time. They may they have issues that they care more about. One thing that I think is interesting about seniors in this election is how much of Donald Trump's appeal is based on appeal to seniors, that there is a very strong tendency for Mr. Trump's voters to be older than average, that I can't remember a presidential candidate that drew such a heavy percentage of his support from senior citizens, and that may be reflective of attitudes on issues like immigration. Certainly, senior issues have not been particularly prominent either in Maine or elsewhere. So I wouldn't say that Maine being an older state really has shaped that kind of discussion, but I think it's very critical to Trump's base of support. I think it's younger voters that are more likely to be motivated to come to the polls because of some new issue, because younger voters are the ones with by far the poorest turnout. And, you know, that may be why some people think the marijuana initiative might bring people out. But I don't see young voters turning out at the rate they did in 2008 when so many of them were excited about Barack Obama.
Well, it's interesting because Rich Livingston was saying he wishes the candidates would address these issues more. Is the reason that the candidates don't address these issues more in the campaign trail is they believe that most of the senior vote is fixed one way or the other, that senior citizens have decided how they're going to vote for? So why address these issues?
I don't know that that's necessarily so much of it. I think this is just a unique election campaign in how much has focused on personalities of the candidates, the honesty of Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump's latest statement that's outrageous. I think that's crowded out a lot of coverage of other issues. So I think partly that's the media and the nature of the candidates. I really don't think it's as much a conscious decision by the campaigns to take older voters for granted. It's been a relatively low campaign on most issues, with the exception of immigration. You know, I think has really gotten more attention in this election than any other. But I don't think it's a conscious decision on the part of the campaigns, no.
Okay, so I'm going to move on, and I'm going to go to Matthew in Klondike. Hi, Matthew. Go ahead.
Klondike's pretty far off.
Where are you from? That's the note I was given.
I'm in Thorndike.
Thorndike, all right.
Klondike is about half a world over the other side.
Well, I know of one in Alaska. I thought there might be somebody might call his own town something fun.
No, just a mistake there. So I have a question regarding an incident that I noticed in the election in 2014 when I stepped up to get ready to vote, and the lady at the polling desk turned her pages until she found my name. Right below my name was the name of another person with a similar spelled name who I know doesn't live in this town anymore. And it seemed to me that there was no way that they could not vote in the town they live in now and then come to Thorndike and vote again. And we've all heard the expression, vote early and vote often, but this actually seemed to be a case where somebody could do that. And I'm wondering if there's a mechanism to scour the voting rolls to see that people aren't voting early and often.
Matt?
Well, actually, you know, this is something that does come up from time to time and usually gets sorted out long before it becomes a legal issue. And, you know, we've gotten one of the things that you mentioned, Jennifer, is that if somebody requests an absentee ballot and they decide not to turn it in and they show up at the polls and vote. Is that a problem? No, it's not a problem, but it does raise a red flag. And what happens at that point is they see that Jennifer Rooks requested an absentee ballot, but she's also checked off at the polls. You know, what they look for then is, did you turn in that absentee ballot? And if you didn't, it's not an issue. And in fact, you know, we see a couple of hundred queries like that every election cycle. In the 10 years that I've served in office, the situation that Matt describes in the Klondike has happened a couple of times. But how it would unfold is that typically somebody would move close to the election. They may have gotten an absentee ballot and cast it in their hometown, and then they're completing the paperwork to do their vehicle registration and get their kids in school and set up stuff at the town office, and they're handed a voter registration card, absentee ballot application, and they fill it out, not realizing that they've already voted. They can't vote twice. And that's only happened a couple of times that we've had to turn something over to the Attorney General's office to see if there was intent to violate election law. And by the way, if you intentionally vote twice, that's a felony. And if you have an issue, if we have an issue where somebody tampers with a ballot box, that's an elevated felony. So most of the penalties associated with misuse of ballots or trying to game an election are very, very steep. It doesn't happen hardly at all. In fact, you know, like I say, we've only had two instances that we've referred to the Attorney General's office, and we found out through their investigation that the people didn't intend to break the law, and they decided not to prosecute them. So one of the things to bear in mind in Matt's description of what happened there is, you know, town clerks are really, really good. And I think we are really lucky as a state to have such devoted and attentive town clerks who know people in their town. And if they see something that strikes them odd, they might pick up the phone and call another town clerk and say, hey, do you know this person? Did they vote in your town because they voted in mine? And that's typically how that stuff gets policed up very early. And any confusion gets put aside before it becomes an issue where people come to mistrust the results of an election.
Jill,
go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to add, the New York Times had an editorial just this morning on this, and the most recent comprehensive study of instances of in-person voter fraud in the country are something like less than 0.0001%. And don't quote me on that number exactly, but it is extremely rare for that to happen anywhere. And certainly in Maine, I echo the Secretary's sentiment about our town clerks. They do a yeoman's job in making sure that the integrity of Maine elections is well intact.
Jim?
I was going to make much the same point that Jill just did, that in spite of the fact that there have been a lot of efforts to require photo ID at polling places and current addresses, the incidence of actual voter fraud is tiny, in part because the benefits are so low. Your chance of actually changing the outcome of the election is relatively low. But the costs, as Matt mentioned, are extremely high. But one of the safeguards I think we have in Maine also is in going to the polls, people see you and recognize you. I live in Augusta, which is a much bigger town than Thorndike, where some of my best students went to high school, incidentally. But I'm always recognized when I go and vote. You know, say, hi, Jim, how are things going on Westwood Road? And it's not just the clerk, and I think Matt is absolutely right about that, but I think we've also got that line of defense that you have to look somebody in the eye and tell them who you are, that I think in Maine is a really pretty significant barrier to people voting where they shouldn't be, because people will recognize you.
Matthew, thanks for your call. We're going to move on to Beth and Nicole. Hi, Nicole. Go ahead.
Oh, hi. How are you?
Great, but I don't hear you very well.
Let's see. Is this any better?
A little bit. Go ahead.
Okay. Thanks. I just wanted to say that as a voter, I think that this is one of the most important elections that we've had in my lifetime. I'm almost 40, both on the, mostly on the presidential level. But another issue that's really important to me is ballot initiative number 3, which is about the background checks for guns. And I've been really concerned to see a lot of signs saying vote no on number 3, and they related it to New York City, saying something like, don't let New York's mayor tell Mainers what to do. And I saw an ad yesterday that said, you know, we don't have the same ones as New York. But that I feel like that really obscures the real issue, which is, you know, having background checks means that people with criminal records, people who are abusing their spouses at home,
right,
are not going to be able to get guns.
Gotcha, Nicole. And we will be doing a Maine calling on that ballot initiative. But let me ask you this, Jim Melcher. Is this a classic tactic to say people from away are behind this ballot initiative?
We've seen those issues come up quite a few times in Maine politics. In fact, I published an article a number of years ago about the impact of being from away in Maine politics, that it's something people will talk about. The best example were some of the casino votes that we had. I remember a very memorable ad showing dollars flowing in from out of state to influence our our casino vote. And because Maine is a relatively small state where media buys are not as expensive, even buying an ad on Portland television is relatively cheap compared to advertising in New York or Chicago or Los Angeles, there's often out-of-state money that flows into campaigns, and in this case, there's certainly money from, you know, not only Michael Bloomberg's organization, but the National Rifle Association. But it's very common. Mainers are very sensitive to the idea that other people will tell us what to do. Other people are trying to influence us. So that's not unusual. I've never seen it on the actual campaign signs the way the No on Three people have. You know, this is a New York City solution to a problem Maine doesn't have. But it's maybe emphasized more, but to say something is the tool of out-of-state interests is something that's been in the Maine politics playbook for a long, long time.
Let me ask you this, though. It's in the playbook, but does it work?
Well, about individual candidates, my research argued that it didn't, that Maine elects people from away on about the percentage basis that that it would otherwise. So in terms of individual candidates, it doesn't seem to be that much of a factor. I think it can be on some of these political issues that I think it ties together one of the things people sometimes resent about people from away in Maine is their money is changing us. They're, you know, it's the old Tim Sample line about how we became independent from Massachusetts in 1820 and they've been buying us back one house lot ever since. And I think that combination of money and out-of-state interest, I think, does motivate some voters. And remember also that an initiative like Issue 3 is something where people don't have their usual party cues. You know, a Republican might say, well, yeah, I'm going to vote for the Republicans. That's how I go. Voting on initiatives is more fluid, is more flexible because people don't have that party cue. So, yes, I think that line of argument very much can be effective. People don't always apply it consistently, but, yes, I think it can be very effective in this state.
Nicole, thanks for your call. Squeezing in one more call before our second break, we're going to go to Ryan in Freeport. Hi, Ryan. Go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to hear the guest's opinion on, I guess, I'm 29 years old, and, you know, since I turned 18, I've always said, you know, if you don't vote, you can't complain. You know, you gotta get out there and vote. You have, that's our voice. And I've always had people, you know, frustrated peers say, you know, does it really matter? Like, I don't vote because it doesn't matter. And I feel like, especially since the last, you know, gubernatorial election and I guess even the last presidential election, it seemed like there's just so much lost there. And with the Electoral College, it seems like it's more so, you know, the higher powers than the actual personal vote. And so I'm wondering just...
Okay, Matt Dunlap, tell Ryan in Freeport why he needs to vote. I mean, it is true. The Electoral College is what elects the president.
Well, that's true, but it is based on the voter turnout. And I tell people all the time, if you don't think your vote matters, come with me. Come with me second, third week of November when we're conducting recounts, and you could have the balance of power in the legislature. Or we did a congressional recount this spring in the first CD Republican primary that was decided by fewer than 55 votes. And when you see people getting elected by one vote, it certainly changes your view of how important these votes are. And certainly, I think when you're talking about, you know, how we inform the issues of the day and how we're charting a course for the future, like Jill's organization is founded on the premise that everybody should have a voice in this democracy because that's how we build a future. And if you stay home, like the caller said, I mean, you can't complain. But then you also bankrupt yourself of the opportunity to have a positive impact on your children's future. And for this particular election, if somebody your candidate that you kind of like loses their election by one or two votes and you stayed home, how does that make you feel? I mean, I was on this program when I was a candidate for U.S. Senate. I had people in my own family tell me, geez, I thought you're going to be fine. I didn't bother to vote on primary day, and I wound up losing that primary. So for the candidates, they can tell you for sure that every vote matters. For the issues, they all matter. And really, for the future of the country, every vote matters. I mean, this is why we fought the revolution and why our military has stood behind us through every conflict over the last 240 years is so that we could have the opportunity to govern ourselves. And that's what elections are all about.
I'd like to jump in real quickly. I've got to head downstairs, and I've got 35 undergraduates waiting for, 30 undergraduates waiting for me in a minute. One thing is, you know, mathematically, in most elections, like a major race, one vote might not make a difference in terms of changing the outcome, but it's a little bit like pieces of litter. You might think, well, my one piece of litter doesn't affect things, but it's about all those choices, that all those choices added up shape what kind of world we live in, shape how connected we are, show how healthy our institutions are, that it adds up and it matters to society how many people turn out. The second issue I want to say about the Electoral College is, for all the frustrations with it, it's predictable. It follows in each state the way people cast popular votes. The Electoral College was designed to be this institution of wiser people that would make decisions. There really aren't very many cases of electors going off on their own. So while the Electoral College makes it possible somebody, as in 2000, may not get as many votes and still win, it's based on how popular votes work in each state. So I certainly would say to the caller and anyone else, don't let the fact that we have an Electoral College think that your vote for president isn't going to be important, because it is going to determine who the electors are from Maine. And, you know, certainly in the 2nd District, that's a real question how they're going to go this year.
Jim, thanks for joining us. Go teach your class. James Melcher, a political science professor at UMaine Farmington. And before we go to a break, Jill, you wanted to jump in as well. Jill Ward.
Yeah, I just wanted to, I guess, echo some of what Matt was saying about every vote counting and your vote in every race where you can have one count. So I think we focus very much on the race for president and presidential years, and that does help with turnout, the trends have shown us. But you're making decisions about who's going to represent you at many levels of government in many venues. And so it is important. Those decisions that get made impact what happens right in your neighborhood, you know, all the way up through president. So I would just encourage younger voters to think about who they're voting for school board or city council or whatever is on the ticket and how that impacts what's happening with your family and in your community. And then I would just put in a little plug. The League of Women Voters puts out a voter guide every year, nonpartisan. We never support parties or candidates, but we try to get the information out to voters so that even if you don't like your choices, get educated about what candidates' stances are on issues and think about what issues matter most to you and try to be inspired in that way. And I think those are two different ways to think about exercising your right to vote, that get beyond, you know, the scenario with the presidents and their popularity, the presidential candidates.
Ryan, thanks so much for your call. Good discussion. We'll be right back. We're talking about voter turnout. This is Maine Calling.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do the Goldfarb Center for Public Affairs and Civic Engagement at Colby College, confronting complex issues through innovative programming, service, and scholarship. Lambert Coffin, advocating for individuals and businesses in Maine trial courts and administrative agencies, online at lambertcoffin.com. And MEMIC, a workers' compensation insurance company dedicated to safer workplaces, fair treatment for all workers, and a strong Maine economy, on the web at MEMIC.com.
All this week on Morning Edition and All Things Considered, the Maine Public Radio news team focuses in on question one on the November ballot, which would establish a marketplace for the sale of recreational marijuana in Maine. How would it work? Who stands to gain? And why are some longtime pot legalization advocates opposed? We'll take a look at what Maine can learn from states that have adopted similar laws. High stakes, how legalizing pot could affect Maine. All this week on Maine Public Radio.
And join us after Maine Calling at 2 o'clock for World Affairs. We'll hear a global philanthropy forum with a focus on the jobs challenge. That's World Affairs after Maine Calling at 2 here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, Getting Out the Vote. In our studio, Jill Ward, president of the Maine League of Women Voters, and in our Augusta studio, Matt Dunlap, who is Maine's Secretary of State. If you'd like to join the conversation, we have just a few minutes left. 1-800-399-3566. Going to Patricia calling from Frenchville. Patricia, what's the weather in Frenchville right now?
Oh, very overcast and very humid, but not terribly cold.
Okay, same as in southern Maine. Sometimes we have two different things going on, but...
We sure do.
Well, go ahead.
Okay, Maine Calling, my favorite show.
Thank you.
You have such a wide diversity. A previous caller said that she thought this presidential election was one of the most important coming up. I think it's one of the scariest, which prompts two questions. Could you please discuss how somebody would properly do a write-in candidate? And I've also heard people discussing, well, if we have a major terrorist attack and martial law is instituted, there will be no election. Is that true?
Matt.
Where's Jim Melcher when I need him?
He had to teach a class.
No, we would never cancel the election for anything. In fact, if you recall from your history books, we conducted a national election in 1864 for president at the height of the Civil War. So there were troops in the field. Atlanta was under siege, and we still had a national election. So, you know, Election Day is always going to be Election Day, regardless of what else may happen. And any changes to that would have to be considered by the legislature and Congress. So I would not worry about being able to vote because of some outside circumstance. You know, I can tell you stories about polling places that lost electricity, and the town clerk would run to the fire station and get flashlights so people could continue to vote despite the loss of power. In terms of a write-in candidate, the law has changed a little bit on that in Maine on write-in candidates. And if you remember years ago, in your weekly paper, when they'd publish the list of the election results, you'd have the actual candidates who were on the ballot, and you'd have the list of write-ins, and people get one or two votes, and you'd see names like Donald Duck and Walt Disney and Darth Vader. That doesn't happen anymore, because now you have to register as a write-in 60 days prior to the election. So you register with the Secretary of State. And that would be true for presidential candidates because they come under state election law, as well as state candidates and county candidates. So what you want to do is you maybe want to check our website for the list of registered write-ins. If you have internet connectivity, go to maine.gov/SOS, look for the upcoming elections page, and look for the list of registered write-ins. And if somebody has registered as a write-in for president, you can write them in. And that will be tabulated and counted. If you write in somebody who's not registered as a write-in, that vote won't be counted because they're not properly registered under the law. So,
and Matt, is it too late, or can someone still register as a write-in if he or she wants to?
It's a bit late now because we changed the law to make it 60 days prior to the election. It was 45 days, but then it was causing a little bit of chaos for the towns and for us to get those people registered in time. It typically happens on legislative candidates, not national candidates. So I think right now the people that are running for president are the people that are running for president, and that'll be those will be your options on who to vote for in November.
Patricia, thanks so much for your call. We have an email from Elna. I regularly get surveys from the League of Women Voters on issues that are in the news. I always fill them out, but never learn how they are used.
Well, thanks for the question. It depends on whether you're getting them from us or whether you're getting them from the League of Women Voters of the U.S. And they're usually used to help determine priorities of legislative and advocacy priorities of the National League. We are an affiliate member of the National League of Women Voters or the League of Women Voters of the United States. So it gets tabulated and reflected back in the priorities that National focuses on. And they're usually in line with what we do in the states, but not always. We have a certain degree of autonomy to focus on the issues that are most important to our Maine members. And that's usually how we move forward.
Okay. Going to Becky, who's calling from Prospect Harbor. Hi, Becky.
Hi. Good afternoon. I echo the woman that said this is a really incredibly important election. And my reason is because we get to vote on rank election or tier voting. And after our two governor races for governor and we split our vote, I was so frustrated in that. I never wanted to have to be caught in that position again. So I'm really happy we are able to vote for this. But it brings me to the millennial vote. And I am friends with a lot of millennial. My children's friends, and they are so frustrated with the two-party that they want to go in and go for a third party. And I said, just look at what happened in Maine. I said, you don't want, this is not the one to, not the time to divide our vote, you know, and get exactly what you don't want. But I said, I will do whatever I can to help move forward nationwide, being able to have ranked elections. And I just want to ask out there, how do you do that? How do you put it so it becomes something we can do at the presidential election, so that people can vote their conscience, their first vote, and not feel like they're throwing it away?
Okay, and I do want to make clear, just as I said with the other ballot initiatives, we will be having Maine calling programs that focus specifically on each of the five citizen initiatives on the ballot this fall. But Matt Dunlap, what do you know about that? If someone wanted to try to have a movement nationally, like the movement that's underway now in Maine toward a different voting system, we're talking about an amendment to the U.S. Constitution, aren't we?
Quite possibly. It's certainly something that would either have to come from the Congress. It'd probably have to come from Congress. I'm not sure that you'd actually have to amend the Constitution, because really election administration in the federal Constitution is left to the states. So, you know, of course, when it comes to the conduct of federal elections, like members of Congress and the president, federal election law does come into play. So Congress could go in that direction and say that we're going to mandate that this has to happen for presidential candidates or what have you, but this and then they would have to make a provision for that and help us find a way to pay for it, because it would require significant changes to do that for the presidential election cycle. So that would have to come from Congress. The legislature here in Maine is very proactive. They're looking at election laws all the time and looking at making updates to make sure that we're keeping pace with the desires of the people, so they can, you know, vote the way they wish to vote. So, and like Jennifer said, I think we're going to be talking about these initiatives in greater detail later on.
Oh, absolutely. Becky, thanks so much for your call. And it's going to be the last call of this hour on voter turnout. I want to thank my guests for being here. Matt Dunlap, whose voice you just heard, is Maine's Secretary of State, a busy guy this time of year. Jill Ward is president of the Maine League of Women Voters. Earlier in the program, we were joined by James Melcher, who's a political science professor at the University of Maine at Farmington. John Keimel ran the board today. We had help in our Augusta studio from Mal Leary. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as a link to our audio archives, by visiting mainecalling.net. Today's program will be rebroadcast this evening at 8. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, the president and CEO of the Maine Public Broadcasting Network, Mark Vogelzang, joins me to talk about recent changes to our network and some changes still to come. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.